Say inside the clubhouse on 670 The Score. He is Bruce Levine. I am Matt Spiegel. And our next guest joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park.
The Hall of Fame writer and broadcaster and good friend, Peter Gammons, joins us on a Saturday morning on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Peter. Thank you for taking some time out today.
Good morning. I kind of miss clubhouses, but we all have responsibilities to one another. So actually, I live on Cape Cod, so it isn't a bad thing because I can go out and walk for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and not speak to anybody. So it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, you're right. In some ways it is, and in some ways it's not, Peter. Matt, I asked Peter yesterday when I asked him to come on, knowing Peter's taste for reading and history, what he was reading. Peter, go ahead and tell us what you've been reading right now to educate yourself.
I finished. It's a great book. His last name is Desjardins, but it's 1918 plague, war, World Series, and it's written by someone who's from New England. Great deal of the beginning deals with the Red Sox winning the World Series in 1918 with Babe Ruth and all those people, and how the World Series started on the 5th of September because of the war. And there's a great deal that goes into the war and people that went to war from New England and so forth, and people in baseball that went. But at the same time, that was the month that the so-called Irish flu, which didn't come from Ireland, it actually came from an army base in Kansas, started, which was still the greatest plague in American history. And so it's an absolutely incredible month, that September of 1918, to think of going into World War One, the Red Sox winning the World Series, and enduring a plague. I grew up in a small town called Groton, Massachusetts, which when I was growing up in the 50s was 2,000 people, maybe 2,500. But in 1918, one of the biggest army bases in the country was Fort Devens, Camp Devens then, which was in Ayer, which was like 7 miles from where I grew up. And at one point in the month of September, 1,500 of the 2,500 people who lived in Ayer were in the hospital with the plague. So it's wow. It's very relevant to what life is like now. It's very well written, and it's absolutely fascinating to see what happened in this country 102 years ago.
Well, it is instructive, right? I remember just reading a little bit about 1919, the baseball season, when they were going to have to shorten it. I think they played 140 games, Peter, and they were thinking that people wouldn't go to the ballpark after the flu, but instead they set attendance records because people were starved for the game, if memory serves. And that's certainly what we're going to see. If there is any baseball of any kind this year, July, August, just playoffs in a World Cup format, anything, I think people will go bananas to have it back in our lives like we haven't seen.
I think they will if they're watching it on television. I'm not so sure people are going to be quick to go back in a large crowd, particularly when there's so much warning that when the cold weather comes back in November, that this flu won't come back. And that is a serious danger to baseball. And going indoors, people say, well, play in ballparks where they have roofs. Well, I'm not so sure people are going to be going indoors. I think it's something that the NBA and NHL face, a reality that's very serious. There is one thing that's really, furthermore, tying together 1918 to 1919, the Red Sox and their team leader, a Stanford graduate named Harry Hooper, a Hall of Famer, they almost forfeited the World Series because the owners, and it was more Major League Baseball, the commission at that point, they weren't basically getting paid. So that the roots of what happened in 1919 came right out of the World Series of 1918. I found it fascinating, though, going back in history, that the Cubs played at Comiskey Park in 1918 in the World Series. And in 1914 and 1915, the Red Sox played at Braves Field because that was also bigger. But the gate receipts for the games in Chicago were about $30,000 apiece. So then the people, the commission that ran baseball, decided at times not to pay players. And so the roots of not only Jim Bunny and Robin Roberts eventually really finding Marvin Miller and starting the union so many years later, what, 1958 or whatever, or 1968. But the root of 1919 was the 1918 World Series.
That's the voice of Peter Gammons, the Hall of Famer, joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. He's Matt. I'm Bruce. We're here for you 52 weeks out of the year talking baseball on The Score on Inside the Clubhouse. Peter, let's fast forward to now. A lot of speculation about the different models that are out there that Major League Baseball is talking about, if and when people can get back together. People talking about, well, we'll have enough energy with crowds or no crowds, if it is no crowds. But what are your thoughts about first them getting back? I think we saw about a three-week turnaround when it was 1995 and they were coming back from a strike lockout. What are your thoughts about how long it would be for the players and your perspective about when you think players themselves would think it would be okay to be in a group with 50 or more?
Well, I think that there's a lot to be answered on that, on what happens as this spreads across the country. I mean, we've been told by medical experts, not political campaign leaders, but by people who actually have dealt in health and are interested in it, and we haven't seen the worst yet. And the worst is pretty awful in New York and New Orleans, and it's getting that way in Miami and so forth. It may be longer than people think. I mean, I'm skeptical about playing this season. I really am, but we'll see. But how much? I just think that there so much has gone on here that it's going to be hard. I think it's difficult for the players. I think the players want to play so badly, and it's not because of the pay. It's because that's what they do and that's what they want to do. And essentially, so many of them really can't work out because they can't go into gyms and you can't gather in groups and so forth. And you know, I did see a great video of Gerrit Cole playing catch with his wife, Amy Crawford Cole, who was an All-American pitcher for a national championship UCLA team. She throws harder than about 20% of the pitchers in the big leagues right now. But that's a workout. But and I know he runs hills all over Orange County. But it's very hard for them. And I think they have to hope for a three-week period. But in that 3 weeks, I think when they come out of it, I think they have to have 30 to 32-man rosters to accommodate. You can't have pitchers going out and throwing seven innings or six innings right off the bat. It's got to be three innings, five innings. I mean, maybe you have almost 40-man rosters for the first 3 weeks to a month of the season. They did go to... they did have 30-man rosters for the first month of the 95 season. So, I mean, this is so different because players were able to work out and so forth. I think that this might require just going to huge rosters and having glorified spring training games for the first 3 weeks to a month.
Peter, it's such a weird moment and so many creative possibilities have to be entertained if there is going to be baseball of any kind. I had my doubts about the ability of this sport in particular to have the players and the owners and the commissioner kind of work together and figure things out. But that agreement that they came to makes me think that maybe there is you know, a conciliatory moment here where the powers that be will be able to hammer out some possibilities if it even gets to that point. What is your sense for the tenor of the conversations between the factions that matter in terms of being able to make big decisions?
Matt, not only are you a great singer, but you just made a great point. I have been blown away by the ability for both sides to understand, look, if we come back, we're still fighting over money. Yeah. I mean, that's a good way to just might as well pull the doors down and not let anybody in the ballpark. Because, and I think that the planning and the advanced thinking of the commissioner's office, I know some owners think, well, geez, you know, they gave the players a great deal. Who cares? I mean, so the players got a good deal here. There's a long way to go on future negotiations. But I give a lot of credit. I know a couple of teams that haven't in the past been great fans of Rob Manfred, but they have gone on and on to me about, you know, he understood that it's they have to think of all possible worst scenarios, and one of them was let's just take the. You know, how much money people get out of it and go forward and reach agreements and then deal with the rest of the issues later. I mean, I know that for instance, people in Boston, some of the writers and broadcasters in Boston, well, what is he doing? Why hasn't he announced what the Red Sox punishment is? You know what? He's got far more important things to do. I had one person in the Red Sox say to me, you know, I don't think he's really even figured out. He has all the facts. But he hasn't been able to think about that. And you know, I know from the Red Sox standpoint, they're going, I mean, why should he? He's got far more important things than do the Red Sox lose a first-round draft choice or they lose none? You know, I mean, that can be done 3 days before the season opening or 3 days after the season opening. I mean, because the draft, who knows when it will be. So I think both sides have really – laid down the armor and said, okay, we're in this together. And I think it's been really positive for the sport. And it's, I thought this is going to be awful trying to come back. And they have reached agreements that I didn't think were possible. So it's told me that Rob Manfred and Tony Petitti and that group are a lot smarter than I am.
Peter, in closing with you, Matt and I really appreciate your time and wish you and your family and everyone you know the greatest of health and as much happiness as you can have during these times. When you hear guys, you know, coming back like Gattis talking about, you know, his part of the Astros thing after he's retired from the game and showing some remorse for it. What are your feelings about that at this point in time? And do you still think the Astros situation is going to be profoundly there once baseball does start again?
I think it will be there. I think that it won't be what it would have been if we'd gone right into the season. What's going to be interesting is that that press conference that they held way back in January, I think told us, it pulled the covers back on about one-fifth of the truth. I think a lot of people lied. There's no doubt in my mind that a lot of people lied. They did a very good job getting together, making sure that a coach and a veteran player were the focus of the blame. When clearly, the club general manager, who I don't think will ever work again in baseball, all the way down, right down to the people, assistant general managers, the rest, to the dugout, to the manager's office. I think there's a lot more that we're going to find out about. And I give a lot of credit to some players. The second baseman never used any of that stuff. Jose Altuve, but he's taken more heat than anybody, which I find remarkable. he will not ask for, he won't go out and say, hey, look, I didn't do this, because he feels that's turning his back on teammates. Now, I've had people say to me, well, that's a little misguided. No, it's about being what teammates are. And I feel badly for Altuve. I think there was clearly, and Rob Manfred did say it that day, that there was a culture there that came from him. Do you think Alex Cora and Carlos Beltran instilled all the cameras and the lights? No. It's police. I mean, they're trying to take us for fools. I understand why some players have been reticent to speak. They clearly were told don't speak. We'll get through this by what we've put out there for the time being. I do think in the next year, we're going to know a lot more, and we'll have a very different view of some of the things that went on there.
Peter, thank you so much. Again, stay safe, stay healthy.
And you too, and I hope everyone in Chicago is healthy. And it would be a great thing if we could all be playing and singing in Chicago on the 21st of June. I don't think that will happen, unfortunately, but it's something we can all dream on, because it does so much for so many people, just as baseball does.
Yeah, Peter, that hot stove cool music benefit every year in Boston, every year in Chicago, is one of the highlights of my calendar and so many other people's. The thing you created is a wonderful thing. And if it doesn't happen in June, we will look forward to the next one, and we'll make music again soon. That's for sure.
We will. And you know what? Maybe we just do it all online and for 1 year, and just remind people of how much the connection of baseball music and social justice is involved.
Thanks again,
Peter. I think it's a good idea.
Appreciate it.
It's a good idea. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Okay.